are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It's Wednesday, October 17th, 2018. My name is Michael Brooks on a Michael Wednesday, and this is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We're broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On today's program, Tina Vasquez. She's a senior immigration reporter for Rewire.news, and she has a piece, Abolish ICE Beyond a Slogan. We're talking about the history of ICE. Where does it come from? What would an actual humane alternative look like with regards to immigration, and how can we actually get rid of this terrorist agency? Mike Pompeo is in Saudi Arabia because there's a mystery to uncover. Who killed Jamal Khashoggi?
Who done it?
It's a classic whodunit. We really have no idea.
It's like strangers on a train over there.
Murdered on the Middle Eastern Express.
Yeah. Except, wow, it's the Orient Express. Doesn't that work?
Murder on the Arabian Express.
Saudi Arabia times a $100 million gift to U.S. efforts to stabilize Syria. Quote, unquote, stabilize Syria. Nicely synchronized with the Pompeo visit. McConnell eyes cuts to Medicare and Social Security to address the deficit as the next cycle of the right-wing game plays itself out. And you need to go out and vote in 2018, only weeks away. Brian Kemp continues to purge and attack voters across the board in Georgia. But protesters, activists, and the very effective, very smart Stacey Abrams campaign is fighting back. The White House looks to replace Ryan Zinke, the Interior Secretary, who is getting investigated. Is this another guy that didn't give Trump his cut?
He's got a history of this already.
He definitely has a history of this.
Also lied about being able to fly fish, apparently.
Really?
Yeah, which is, I mean, I don't know why he still has a career in Montana politics, but whatever.
Well, I know why he still has a career in Republican politics. Defrauded students win a class action certification in a lawsuit against DeVos. Great news for students and America. Alaska's lieutenant governor resigns after some, what he calls, inappropriate remarks. We'll get to that. Jair Bolsonaro has a strong lead in the polls as fascism surges in Brazil, with the strategic guidance of Steve Bannon and the total collapse and breaking of the centrist political class in Brazil to fascism, as Lula da Silva remains gagged in prison by the Brazilian Supreme Court. We could be on the verge of the largest famine in the world in 100 years because of the Saudi-UAE-US war on Yemen. And getting back to basics, Canada makes marijuana legal. I'm thinking of one song contributor there.
Finally, Canadians will chill out a little bit.
Finally, Canadians can relax. And I guess, well, this is in the packet. Some guy who owned a brothel in Nevada who, like Trump, died. Okay. Goodbye, guy. We hardly knew ye, nor particularly cared. And Christian Services, the Bethany Christian Services, is fostering migrant kids. It also has a coercive history of adoptions. All that and more on today's Majority Report. Mike Pompeo, the Secretary of State, who looks like a creation from the Koch brothers labs, corn syrup come to life. He's a extraordinarily extremist far right figure, a Koch backed guy, you know, like pretty much all of them are, but it's just important to note that when even this guy, this sort of, you know, extremist house guy has ascended to the heights.
When you come from the Koch brothers' house district and then you're putting in the positions of power that Pompeo is, it's time to get concerned a little bit.
Yeah. But of course, I'm sure the Kochs are super concerned about the Trump administration because they deplore racism, say. It's not like I've been funding racist, literally discriminatory efforts for decades, going back to James Buchanan, say. I really don't like the racism. Anytime a libertarian tells you they don't like the racism, say, you're not very bright.
Do you like inheritances from the racism times?
Right. Do you like the idea of doing anything about the racism? Do you support policies that codify it?
How about the structures the racism put in place?
Or the structures that feed the racism.
Well, that's not a thought experiment. None of that is thought experiment-based thinking, which is where liberty comes from. Mike Pompeo is in Saudi Arabia because, of course, we have a classic whodunit on our hands. We do know, and we have known for years, both the Obama administration and the Trump administration, whodunit in terms of mass murder in Yemen. And it's also us. We're accomplices in the crime. But whodunit of the interrogation and murder of Jamal Khashoggi. So here's what we know. It's important to re-review this because this isn't just taking Turkish reports at face value. This is, we have CCTV footage of Jamal Khashoggi goes into the Saudi embassy, the Saudi consulate, and doesn't leave. And then we have the surveillance footage of that team that came from Saudi, including a DNA expert. So that's what we know. Supposedly, the Saudis have been preparing. And they're putting out the story that this was an interrogation gone wrong, which...
Like a Coen Brothers situation.
Right. It was a very Coen Brothers situation. And I mean, I guess in the strict... Like, they're pretty much admitted, like, yeah, we tortured him and we're interrogating him. We were going to abduct him. And then I guess somebody got a little overly frisky and murdered him.
See, I told you there was an innocent explanation.
I told you
there
was an innocent explanation. They're obviously, literally, right now as we speak, if they haven't decided already, figuring out who's expendable here. And no doubt MBS felt comfortable doing this in the context of a Trump presidency. Donald Trump calls the press the enemy of the people all the time. MBS is just following his lead. But here's Mike Pompeo in Saudi Arabia, and there's an interesting accidental word choice in this clip, but of course you can tell, as representative of the Trump team, they're really serious about getting to the bottom of the murder of Jamal Khashoggi.
Sir, did they tell you what happened to Jamal Khashoggi?
Told me they were going to conduct a thorough, complete, transparent investigation. They made a commitment to hold anyone connected to any wrongdoing that may be found accountable for that, whether they are a senior officer or official. They promised accountability for each of those persons whom they determine as a result of their investigation has deserves accountability,
including a member of the royal family.
They made no exceptions to who they would hold accountable. They were very clear. They understand the importance of this issue.
That was implied.
They're determined to get to the bottom of it, and that they will conduct the report, and we'll all get a chance to see it. They each promised that they would achieve that for us.
And did they say that Mr. Khashoggi is alive again?
I don't want to talk about any of the facts. They didn't want to either, and that they want to have the opportunity to complete this investigation in a thorough way. I think that's a reasonable thing to do, to give them that opportunity, and then we'll all get to judge.
Right. So they want an opportunity to figure out what their core cover story is for the abduction and murder of this guy, the detention of him in a consulate. And I will say, given MBS's record and his moves against rival members of the royal family, I would not be surprised if he feels comfortable with other members of the royal family being held accountable for this. I would definitely chalk that as extremely plausible that MBS could probably think of several cousins that he would be down with pinning this on. The trouble is, for him, in terms of covering this up, is that Jamal Khashoggi and other people on the Hill in Washington had connections to other members of the royal family who were rivals of this guy. So that might be hard to do that. But
MBS says, I don't control these guys. Yeah. Oh, sorry, that was Gavin McGinnis.
Right, exactly. Like, we started it. It's a thing. It's called the monarchy. Started it hundreds of years ago. It's like a club. And we have the royal sites. But, you know, if people kill blasphemers, I don't, you know. That's just my army and intelligence service. I don't run them. I'm a reformer. This is a picture of Mike Pompeo and MBS. This is about their fourth date. And they are... I will say MBS really does. He has the... He's got a winning smile.
I can't tell who has more butterflies in their stomach.
Yeah. I like how,
in a red bromance.
I love how, the Saudis are, the only Muslims that these guys don't hate. They're like, we would be completely loathe Muslims, period. But just the Saudi monarchy, man. They're good guys.
They're great. Someone pointed out to me the other day that MBS is a millennial.
Mm-hmm. He's only 33 or 34.
Which makes sense, because millennials do tend to murder things and people. Right?
What?
Oh my God.
They'd be killing.
They'd be killing it. Well, okay.
Killing journalists.
They also murdered Joe Crowley's career, apparently. That's what he said. But this is the sound I hear when I see this picture. Do you want to go to the picture just quickly, Brandon?
Yeah.
That's copyright.
Just 3 seconds, but you get the joke.
I like how they really are. They're like, no, we're not even going to do. Let's not even pretend to have. Let's not even pretend to have the photo op where I look like gravely concerned about you clipping, torturing, murdering, and dismembering. I mean, I'm sorry. And if kids are listening, and they probably already shouldn't have been listening to this if they're really young. But let's just outline that for a second. The Turkish police version of this story, which they have. The video surveillance evidence, which everybody sees, supports this, as well as the testimony of Jamal Khashoggi's former fiance, who has been very brave and aggressive on this, is that he walks into the consulate, is detained, tortured, murdered, and then cut up into pieces and driven out in a van. I mean, I'm not trying to put too far. I mean, I guess on some level, to kill somebody is to kill somebody. But
premeditation.
That is a rat in a fucking consulate. That's where, you know, people go to update their friggin' passport pictures. I mean, he was going there to basically just take care of some domestic business because he was getting remarried. And they tortured him and they chopped his body up I mean, I'm not even going to do a movie analogy because it actually is tasteless. That's literally what they did. And this is the outcome of that. It's hey, man, how's it going? It's impunity. That's global authoritarianism. That is the Trump era.
Typical millennial entitlement.
He's really, really trying to turn us into a millennial bit.
Millennial Ben Salman.
Millennials. Mom, Mom, why can't I kill Jamal Khashoggi? Dad has killed all the dissonance. There is no dissonance for me to kill. Why did the baby boomers kill all the dissonance? There wasn't an opportunity for us to kill the dissonance. Well, as Thomas Friedman would say, he had a dark side, including millennial entitlement.
And some balls, as Thomas Friedman would also say.
Yeah, and if you're willing to have the balls to chop up Jamal Khashoggi, you know what? Fuck it.
If you have a New York Times subscription, cancel it, folks.
Indeed. Support something that needs support and is actual resistance. One of today's sponsors, or today's sponsor, is newsvoice.com/majority. We all know, and actually perfectly apropos with what Matt's talking about, we live in an era of high media concentration, monopolies, and bubbles where people only consume news from very narrow sources, which either fit pre-existing narratives that they already have or don't challenge bigger narratives that the conglomerates have. It's important and smart and wise to have a high-quality, diverse range of news analysis and opinion. And there's a new company that's come up with their own response to these problems. It's called News Voice. It's an app for iOS and Android, which you can access for free if you go to newsvoice.com/majority. And it gives you a personalized news feed by aggregating a mix of mainstream media sources, international sources, and independent media sources. A big part of my process for both shows I do is a lot of international news sources. And I know that people know that I pay attention to international stories, so that's part of it. But I also like to read and watch how, as an example, I don't know, say France 24 is talking about elections here, talking about dynamics here. They have sometimes analysts from the United States that don't go on the cable networks that are actually really good. Come guests for this show as an example. Multiple sources are provided for each news story. The entire app is fueled by crowdsourcing. You can upvote stories you think are important so more people will see them. You can add stories to the app. You can add a source that's missing for a story. It's meant to be completely open and democratized news aggregator that lets you get every side of every story. They also have video interview series featuring guests from Chris Hedges to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Go download the app for free at newsvoice.com/majority. We've put a link under this video if you're watching on YouTube. We're going to take a brief break, and we will be right back with Tina Vasquez. We're talking about how to get rid of ICE.
By the way, I just want to say we got DJ Danarchy on the music.
Oh,
today.
Yes, indeed. DJ Danarchy gave us a slew of fresh beats for MR and TMBS. He is a gem. Danarchy, set up a Patreon so we can all support you. Thanks, brother.
I was simply trying to fix the culture in many ways.
Superpower, we are now a hyperpower.
Ask the moms.
You have a wonderful day, bro, and I'll see you again soon.
Welcome back to the Majority Report. Michael Brooks here. Joining us now is Tina Vasquez. She is a senior immigration reporter at Rewire.news. Tina, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Tina, you have a new piece out called Abolish ICE Beyond the Slogan. Before we get to how we actually abolish this monstrosity, can you go back and give us a history of ICE? Does ICE go back to the founding of this country?
It doesn't, which is maybe, at least that's the argument of the advocates that want to abolish ICE, is that it's doable because it's not like an agency like Border Patrol, which has been around since the 1920s. ICE was created in 2003 as part of the Department of Homeland Security, and it was created right after the September 11th terrorist attacks. Mm-hmm. And so immediately you saw this sort of conflating of immigration with terrorism, and in the beginning, at least, ICE really impacted Muslim immigrant communities in unprecedented ways. And now you're seeing sort of similar tactics being applied to immigrants of all kinds, including Central American immigrants, Mexican immigrants. You have these narratives about them being rapists and drug dealers and violent gang members and criminals. So that conflating of immigration with bad stuff has kind of been how ICE has always operated. But yeah, it's only a 15-year-old agency.
How did ICE ramp itself up? I think it's important to lay this history out because there's no doubt that there's a departure and acceleration under Trump, and people who would draw a false equivalency between Trump and Obama as an example, that's just inaccurate. At the same time, obviously, it was created under Bush in the context of counterterrorism. And that's a really dangerous thing to merge and equate immigration writ large and terrorism specifically. And then under, you know, as the Bush years progressed and then under Obama, ICE became an incredibly aggressive and really ruthless, almost like kind of paramilitary mindset agency. How did that happen?
I mean, I think it really has to do with funding. I mean, there are multiple instances in which you see ICE asking for far beyond what they budgeted, and Congress gives them the money just about every time. So they have these resources to detain and deport people in unprecedented numbers, and there's really not a series of checks and balances for ICE. There are multiple instances, like even when something as egregious as sexual assault happens in an ICE detention center, it's basically ICE investigating itself. So this is an agency that has unprecedented funding, that moves to quickly hire people at reduced standards. And then with the Obama administration in particular, you see ICE basically get militarized, and that's often tied to, it's like two steps forward, one step back. So you'll have something like DACA rollout, and it's almost like to appease Republicans or people in opposition to doing anything for immigrant communities. You'll see administrations then feel the need to ramp up immigration enforcement. If they're going to give a small percentage of immigrant communities anything like DACA, then that came with increased border enforcement. It came with more ICE agents. It came with an uptick in things like ICE raids. So it's like a tit for tat kind of thing. If there's any sort of advancement for immigrant communities, you see huge increases in financial support for ICE, which just lets them carry out the kind of enforcement that we're seeing now.
So I want you to talk specifically about what concretely the shifts from Obama to Trump have been in terms of the aggressiveness of ICE. And I'm asking that specifically because I think that, and tell me whether this is true or not, because obviously you know more than I do. But my read on it is there's many, many things to criticize Obama about with regards to ICE and immigration writ large, from the militarization of ICE to amping up deportations and so on. And like you said, it was sort of in the context of both trying to appease Republicans who will never be appeased. They'll always say that Obama's a, you know, Maoist, Muslim, whatever, who wants open borders no matter what he does, right? And then at the same time, to sort of like make a deal. Because generically, if you poll this, most people, I think not knowing much specifics, but if you ask most people, including even I think actually majority Republicans, they're like, yeah, increase enforcement, but provide a path for citizenship for people who are already here. That's kind of roughly popular. And that's what Obama was actually doing or attempting to do. So he did also the DACA on the positive side. He also was sort of like looking to make a deal. With Trump, it seems to me not only is it, I mean, first and foremost, humanitarian catastrophe, but it's like a strategic white supremacy. It's part of a broader effort, whether we're talking about voter suppression or other issues, to try to engineer an electorate that can favor a predominant, like basically white identity politics party. So first, like, does that read make sense to you? And then specifically, how has it jumped? Like, what have the changes been under Trump from Obama? Like, even in like the real nuances?
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense to me. I think that's certainly the case. I mean, something that we unpack in the article is that, like, I think asylum seekers are a very good example of the shift that you're seeing between the two administrations. Whereas under the Obama administration, we did see horrible things like family detention was brought back. We saw really horrible treatment of asylum seekers. So, you know, when family units migrated, they were then put in detention together. And that was brought back under the Obama administration. But the really important context that we unpack in the article is that the Obama administration was responding to a humanitarian crisis at the border, meaning that our immigration system was not prepared to handle the number of people migrating to the U.S. seeking asylum from Central America. The Trump administration created a humanitarian crisis at the border by separating families and basically disappearing children into a system, deporting their parents, and having no mechanism in place for them to be reunited. So that's one example. But under the Obama administration, you did see, I think, sincere moves to help immigrant communities. It was an administration that was in a really tough place. There wasn't a lot that could be done for comprehensive immigration reform. I think that was discussed throughout Obama's 8 years. But then you have the Trump administration, which is just overtly racist, overtly anti-immigrant. And everything that we're seeing under this administration is specifically to limit the number of people who can migrate to the U.S., especially Black and brown immigrants, and to expel as many Black and brown immigrants as humanly possible. Like, this is just a clamp down on the system. And you see all of the federal immigration agencies working together in a way that, in my years doing immigration reporting, for example, I've not really seen USCIS participate in immigration enforcement. But under this administration, with an appointee like CISNA that was appointed by Trump, you see, like, you know, they're not calling it a denaturalization task force, but you're seeing a concerted effort to denaturalize people who have been here for many years and for minor offenses. Mm-hmm. And I think those are the most marked shifts, where the immigration system under Obama wasn't operating well and a lot of people were being deported. And I think it was a person who didn't know how to handle it, or there weren't the correct systems in place in order to help more immigrant communities. But the Trump administration has no desire to help immigrant communities. They want to expel them and keep them from coming here.
Absolutely. So in the piece, you start by taking us back to 2013 and a group called, a woman named Marissa Franco, and a group called the National Day Laboring Organization. And they started something, the hashtag Not One More campaign, which, you know, if I'm reading you correctly, sort of like, that's the sort of precursor of Abolish ICE. Can you take us specific, because that will parallel what you were already talking about, but that history basically on the other side of this equation, which is of activist organizations who actually care about the human dimension, the actual dimension of these issues, when their shift sort of pivoted to ending deportations and dealing also specifically with the crimes of Joe Arpaio versus a sort of congressional process.
So yeah, we decided to start with Marissa Franco. She's now with Mi Gente, and that's the organization that we profile pretty prominently in the piece, because they've released a pretty thorough platform of what abolishing ICE looks like to them. But in 2013, Marissa Franco was behind the Not One More campaign. So it was like a coalition of different organizations, and their entire goal was to stop the Obama administration from deporting any more immigrants. And we start there because Marissa then goes on to be the executive director of Mi Gente, and now they've released this platform for abolishing ICE. And it's a very similar idea, where she was coming from in Arizona. There was SB 1070 under Joe Arpaio, and it was one of the most anti-immigrant laws in the country that basically allowed for racial profiling. And so they were fighting Arpaio, but then nationally, they were also trying to stop deportations under the Obama administration largely also. So you have that kind of mindset now with Mi Gente, where they're being told to wait until Trump leaves office. They're being told to wait for some sort of congressional intervention. And to them, that doesn't seem feasible. And so the agency that is responsible for carrying out deportations is ICE. So they tried to stop deportations in 2013, and this is kind of just a continuation of the same thing.
What's their plan? Let's outline it. And then we'll get to ICE's response and how Republicans are trying to leverage this. But the kind of meat of it, like what are they actually proposing, and what does it concretely look like to abolish ICE and really fundamentally reset what immigration policy is all about?
I mean, I can't remember how many pages is it. It's pretty thorough, but It starts with, you know, they want to see the removal of Attorney General Jeff Sessions. Mm-hmm. They want to repeal laws that criminalize migration. So specifically, they talk about laws that were passed in 1996 that led to more immigrants being detained and for longer periods of time. They want to end all forms of detention. And then they want to halt things like Operation Streamline, which is, you see, like now you're seeing images under the Trump administration zero tolerance policy of like courtrooms filled with a bunch of immigrants. And it's like one hearing for a bunch of people. Operation Streamline has been doing that for a really long time. So it's criminal prosecution of immigrants. It's very rapid processing of their cases. So there is no due process. And it's basically trying to get people deported as quickly as possible. So those are kind of the major pillars of their platform.
And does there is do they have a relationship or a sense of sort of building bridge? I mean, because first and foremost, I like that approach, and it's true. It's an activist action. It needs to take place even in the worst of circumstances, obviously. But is there a sense that at least, you know, people on the left, whether they're Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who you mentioned in the article, or Mark Pocan or others, starting to look into this and develop policy out of it for the future in Congress so that, you know, because as you said it, maybe you could integrate this into the answer too, like the Republicans are, you know, they're seeing like, let's put abolish ICE up for a vote and, you know, we'll use it to gin up our base and make you look like you have no plan. Or is there some sort of Democratic response to working policy based off of this?
I mean, I think there was some controversy with a person like Ocasio-Cortez because Abolish ICE was initially part of her platform. But then she clarified that to her, abolishing ICE didn't mean abolishing deportations. And so a lot of the organizers and activists that I spoke to for the piece, abolishing deportation is absolutely about abolishing ICE for them.
Right.
And so that's the tricky part, is that everyone that I spoke to understood that at some point they're going to need elected officials to get on board. But at the same time, they seemed very wary of how elected officials would use this movement to create bills that actually, at the end of the day, didn't help immigrants. I mean, three Democrats have proposed a bill that would shut down ICE. It would probe, you know, whether or not they've flouted international law. It would create a special commission for people who've been deported. I mean, there is movement, but how that will take shape at the end of the day and whether that will like actually benefit the most impacted, which is undocumented immigrants who have no recourse for staying in this country under this administration, I think that's really hard to tell.
Yeah, Senator Christian Dillibrand, I'm going to paraphrase, I don't have it in front of me, but she said something like that recently. Like she made a show along, you know, with some other much more centrist, you know, politicians a couple months ago of kind of getting with hashtag abolish ICE. But she had this statement of like, it sounded almost like something from like some type of something like a yoga teacher would say, you know, it's like, yeah, let's like reinvent like the idea of like what ICE could be. And it was like, by the time you parsed it, it was like, oh, you literally are talking about like, let's junk that name.
Yeah. I mean, if it just means creating another agency that sole purpose is detaining and deporting immigrants, I mean, what, you know,
right.
I don't know if that's really beneficial.
Right. So there needs to be much more like structural meat put into like even when people are using that hashtag, even like in a social media sense, starting to use a report like this and reporting like yours to be like, well, no, actually, we've got some actual demands here. We're not talking a rebrand.
Yeah. I mean, and I think what's really important and what I say all the time is that, I mean, I think step number one for people who really want to get involved in this movement to abolish ICE is to understand their own immigration system. I mean, you really saw a huge uptick in the call to abolish ICE after the family separation policy at the border. And maybe this is nitpicky, but it actually isn't ICE that carried out those separations. That's CBP and Border Patrol.
Mm-hmm.
So like these very basic understandings, I think, are sometimes lacking. But if you understand all of these pieces and how they come together and how these agencies interact to carry out immigration enforcement and what agencies detain what immigrants and for what reasons. I mean, that's like really crucial knowledge. If you need to understand what ICE does before you can call to abolish it.
Could you do a little brief? I mean, I don't want to make it too complicated, but can you give us a little primer right now on that? Like what does ICE handle? What does Border Patrol? I don't know.
Sure. So, yeah. they all fall under the Department of Homeland Security. Mm-hmm. So you've heard a lot about ORR, the Office of Refugee Resettlement, recently, because mm-hmm. they handle, so they take custody of immigrant children, basically young people under the age of 18 who migrate alone or were subjected to the family separation policy. So they're in ORR custody. ICE carries out, I mean, ICE has different arms, but essentially they carry out the detaining and deportation of immigrants. So they run, well, that's murky too. ICE oversees the detention system, but mm-hmm. they contract with private prison companies. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. ICE actually doesn't run a lot of its own detention centers. Those contracts go to private prison companies. And then you have Customs and Border Protection and Border Patrol, and they're largely in charge of border enforcement. So they were the agencies that carried out the family separation policy. They're the agencies that work at the border.
Okay. So that's actually, yeah, that's extremely helpful. So, yeah, because that's an, and also I think that the privatization piece, that also goes back to the 90s, right? Like even some of the legislation pushed by the Republican Congress then and signed by Bill Clinton started a process whereby private detention centers were integrated into this process too.
Yeah, private detention centers. I mean, it's the same companies that also run prisons.
Right.
And so you see, like the biggest thing that gets discussed with me for people who've been detained is the lack of healthcare. So you have people literally dying in custody because the people who run the detention center, the private prison employees, just don't receive proper training. There aren't enough of them, whatever. ICE actually they provide the healthcare, but I mean, there are cases where a person is clearly having a heart attack and it doesn't occur to anyone at the detention center to call an ambulance for hours. And that person eventually ends up dying in a hospital. These are like very, very common stories. And so these private prison companies like GEO Group, like CCA, Corrections Corporation of America, they run a bulk of ICE's detention centers, and the medical care in them is really, really egregious, which is why, you know, how that connects to ICE is when ICE detains more and more people and the standards are already so low and people are already so harmed at detention, what are the chances that with this huge uptick in detention that we'll be able to properly care for people in detention?
Right. Well, that actually leads me, we'll leave a little bit of a disgusting note. People really need to read this piece. But I do have to say, apropos of you outlining that so well, I'm going to quote now from your piece. I asked ICE itself for comment. Recent ICE responded this way. Recent calls to abolish ICE are dangerously misguided and overlook the vital work that ICE officers and special agents perform each day to keep communities safe, an agency spokesman told me in email. Instead of being insulted with politically motivated attacks, the men and women of ICE, I feel like I should have Mission Impossible music bedded under this, the men and women of ICE should be praised for risking life and limb every day in the name of national security and public safety. My only question is, where's the 9/11 reference? Can you break down the stats? How many, just in the interest of fairness, how many ICE agents have died and been seriously injured in the course of separating families or doing any of their work?
So that's a really good question. I mean, that's something that I wanted to look into for this piece and it didn't make it in. So we know that over 200 immigrants have died in ICE custody, that several have already died this year. I believe it's 7 or 8, with the last person dying in July. When researching for this piece, I tried to find instances of ICE agents being harmed or killed in the line of duty. I found two relatively recent cases within the last 10 years. One was two ICE agents fighting each other, and one of them shot the other.
Oh, Jesus.
And then the other case was they were performing some operation in Mexico, and an agent was shot then.
But not inside the United States.
Yes.
Okay. So that might have actually been something that they might have actually been dealing with something real there.
Yeah. But the idea that this is, I mean, they are law enforcement agencies, so there are risks, but I couldn't find it. It's not like undocumented immigrants are in the streets harming ICE agents.
It's not
like that.
Right. But that being said, Tina, we should thank them for risking life and limb every day And I want to thank you for risking life and limb in your reporting. The piece is Abolish ICE Beyond a Slogan. You can find it at Rewire News. Tina Vasquez, senior immigration reporter at Rewire News. We'll have links to Twitter and all the other ways that you can follow Tina's work on the show notes for Majority.fm. Tina, thanks a lot for your time.
Thank you.
All right, folks. We are going to go to the fun half where we have a lot of sound. Is it fun sound, guys?
There's some good Beto O'Rourke.
Oh, yeah. Ted Cruz, debate nerd getting owned in a debate.
Oh, I like that.
By a cool kid.
By a cool skateboard punk guy.
Yeah.
By a school skateboard Whataburger fan.
Wow. Lion Ted. Can't get your break.
There was a Lion Ted moment, actually.
It sucks. You're going to want this fun half. Yeah.
Everybody should have adopted all of Trump's nicknames.
We're
going to
bully Ted Cruz.
Yes. Hashtag bully the right people. Yeah, no, because Sam the other day in prep was like, there's no fun sounds anymore. He really, that's a real Sam like oscillation there, because he goes in between like, how come nobody got the trustees report from Social Security? We could take 10 minutes of that and I could just riff it. It could just be like jazz in the fun half.
You know,
and then 2 months later, he's like, why isn't anybody looking at Raw Story? Anderson Cooper lookalike kicked a Boehner lookalike in the nuts, and I could talk about that. Do you see?
Yeah, I must say, like, as you could probably gauge our sort of mental stability by what goes on the sound sheet. And there's certain times, like after, you know, the IPCC climate change report, where you don't really have the appetite for just dumb Fox clips.
No, you're just like, whatever. Just let the oceans drown them.
Yeah.
Like where they like sitting there and talking to the steak doctor and a giant storm just comes in. Like the only good effects of climate change. We had a great TMBS last night, Matt, as we always do. But the linking the Democracy in Chains research with an in-depth interview with Noah Changa on what's happening in Georgia, voter suppression, but also the very positive and very real possibility of a Stacey Abrams win, the future of the Southern Democratic Party, my Anna Navarro impression, which was actually pretty funny to me. I think I stole one of your lines, actually, by accident. I remembered it. Did you do it off mic with Anna Navarro being like, I don't know what John McCain would say, but it would be classy.
Hey,
did you do that?
Didn't she actually say that?
I believe
she did.
Okay, I'm like a Contra. And when Ronald Reagan supported paramilitaries to kill nuns, it was classy. Totally different than Trump. So we did that. We had a really good post game. I mean, you know all the ways. We are well on our way now. We cleared 1,700, so we're on our way to our new goal of 2,000 patrons. This past weekend, the illicit history of Patrice Lumumba, the Congo Civil War, and Apple made an appearance as well. Patreon.com/TMBS plus YouTube channel, Michael Brooks Show on YouTube. Lots of new clips up right now, including really fun, actually, diss sessions of Thomas Friedman with both Alex Perrine and Matt Taibbi. Jamie.
So this week on the Antifada, we had a bit of a discussion of Comrade Gritty. Is he friend to workers? Or perhaps he's mocking the sports fans of Philadelphia? Maybe a little bit of both. Then we took some questions from our listeners. We didn't have a guest this week. It was just the skeleton crew, me, Sean, and Andy. And I got to say, the listeners' questions were pretty quality.
Yeah.
So shout out to you guys. We talked about, what did we talk about? So out of it today. Witches and the occult. We talked about mandatory voting, which is a thing I talked about on here the other day. I fleshed that out a little. People asked my
You support it. You want to have mandatory voting. Oh, what happened to that?
In a socialist society, yes, I do. We talked about why Sean says dead ass so much. how often we question our beliefs and even waded a little bit into the Angela Nagel controversy. So check it out, folks.
There's an ongoing Angela Nagel.
Oh, this is always a
or the original one.
I don't even know. Still a good book.
Listen to the show and find out.
A literary hangover. We did a Corey Robbins book recently. That's going to be on YouTube. It was still, I was hoping to be exported overnight.
Still exporting.
Still had about 4 hours to go. So, so that's where that's at, but I should have it uploaded tonight. And I am going to be doing a, well, some people might say George Carlin, other people might say Age of Napoleon, but a monologue style history edition of the Literary Hangover, where I'm going to go into the Pequot War and the Mystic Massacre and John
really
Oldham. And yeah, so look out for that.
I listened to the Reactionary Mind episode.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought it was very good, though it was just defamatory and shameful how you took me out of context.
I ripped you and Jamie from context.
You ripped Jamie and I both from context in a way that was just unethical.
Like literal violence.
It was literal violence. It was unethical. And I'm going to be releasing an email exchange or a text exchange that you and I had about it. All right, folks. IMs will be fired up in a minute. Phones will be on in a minute. See you in the fun. What's up?
Do we want to do a shorter fun half?
No, I need a,
okay,
need a minute.
All right, give me just 1 second here, and we will go to the. We're gonna do the. We're gonna do good old Danarchy,
folks. Yeah. I'm gonna be in LA this weekend with Sam at Politicon. If you have any restaurant recommendations for LA, DM me.
Have you been to LA before?
I've been a few times, but it's a massive county.
Yeah,
it is. There's a lot of places I haven't.
What part of LA is the thing in?
I have to check.
You guys are going to tear it up.
Some convention center.
Okay. I'm going to be in Boise, Idaho, which apparently there's
a
lot
town.
Of DSA and other people there who I don't know, because I'm going to be really busy, but maybe if maybe we could, I don't know. Yeah. Reach out.
It's a
there's
cool
a, there's a watering
cool.
hole in Boise.
There's a watering hole. I think there's a literal watering hole. Hopefully I'll be hanging out with my buddy Luke Mayville there. All right, everybody. We'll see you in the front half.
You are in for it.
All right, folks. 646-257-3920. See you in the fun.
Are you ready?
Who sent us this?
Danarchy.
Alpha males are back. Back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back. Back.
Just as delicious as you can imagine.
The alpha males are back, 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 back. And the alpha males are back, 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 back.
Just wanna degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back, back.
I take all of it in my throat.
Alpha males are back, 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 back.
Almost as what?
The alpha males are back, 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 back.
You are a madman.
And the alpha males are back, back.
I am a total cunt.
Can we bring back DJ Danarchy's song, please?
Yeah, or a couple of them. Just put them in rotation.
DJ Danarchy.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough of a break for people.
That's fucking nonsense.
Hey, fuck. Reminder.
I do not have Parkinson's.
And the alpha males are...
Psych. Fuck them. Fuck them.
Almost says what?
What?
Almost says what?
Hell out of the bank. 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 Hell out of the bank.
Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black Africans. And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black.
Donald Trump out there, doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keep it at 100. Can't knock the hustle.
Come on!
Fuck them. Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way,
It's my birthday. Happy birthday to me, Jew boy.
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black. Alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black.
Come on. To pay the price for blasphemy around here.
I am a total
pussy.